Good evening, and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, November 12th. I'm Gabriel Zucker, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, fast-moving atmospheric river hits Northern California tonight. Mendocino sees high wind warnings. DHHS issues a warning about recall of ByHeart baby formula. Some was sold at the Target in Eureka. Southern Humboldt, World War II veteran, decries authoritarian backslide. Felon arrested in possession of sawed-off shotgun and narcotics in Lolita. Stay tuned, those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilkut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection that these tribes have to this region.
Tonight, a fast-moving storm driven by an atmospheric river will be hitting and bringing high winds and rain to the region, Nat Cardos reports.
Tonight, a strong, fast-moving storm will be moving in and bringing high winds and rain. On the Mendocino coast, there is a high wind warning in effect as the storm is bringing in winds from 25 miles per hour up to 40, with gusts up to 60 miles per hour. This warning will remain in effect until 7 a.m. Thursday. In Humboldt, there is just a wind advisory in effect, as winds will also be between 25 to 40 miles per hour, and gusts will be up to 55 miles per hour. KMUD News spoke to James White, a meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Eureka, for more information on the storm.
So we have a pretty quick-moving storm overall. You know, if you want to use the atmospheric river term, it'd be like a moderate atmospheric river. It'll impact our area here over the next 24 to 36 hours. The main focus of it is going to be south of, you know, the Eureka, Humboldt Bay area, mostly in Mendocino, Lake County is in southwest Humboldt. And, you know, the first things we're feeling from that is some pretty strong increased southeast wind. We're already feeling that in the higher elevations of our area. Some gusts right now, 40, 45 miles an hour in those upper elevations. Those winds will continue to increase through the evening, and they'll peak late tonight. The strongest wind should stay pretty isolated to the higher elevations, not too much mixing down into the interior valleys or Humboldt Bay or those lower elevations, though you could still see some gusts in those lower elevation places near 40 miles an hour. I wouldn't be surprised if you don't see some peak gusts in those upper elevations, 50 to 60. The exception to that is going to be on the Mendocino coast, where we do have some pretty strong winds forecasted and even populated areas like Fort Bragg, Point Arena, where there could be some gusts over 50 to 60 miles an hour or so. So risk with that is, you know, trees coming down, limbs, power lines, but it's overall not going to be as strong as even what we saw last week.
Heavy rain is expected tonight as well, starting around 10 p.m., with the heaviest being from 2 a.m. to 8 a.m. Rainfall is expected to peter off throughout Thursday evening into early Friday. Southern Humboldt and Mendocino County expect to see the most rain between 2 to 3 inches, with areas further north most likely seeing 0.5 to 1.5 inches of rain. Here's White with more.
Strongest rain will build in behind mostly very late tonight and early Thursday morning. Overall, rain amounts are pretty mild. Here at the lower elevations of Humboldt, especially the northern half, and up into Del Norte, you're only talking about 0.5 to 1 inch or so. But up in southwest Humboldt, the upper elevations, and throughout Mendocino and Lake, you're talking about 2 to 3 inches of rain and higher. That's not a crazy amount of rain for some of our storms, but it's happening over a very short period of time, so we're expecting some higher, a heavier rain than normal, as in higher rain rates, because most of that's going to fall within just about 6 to 10 hours or so, mostly between probably around 2 or 4 a.m. to around 8 a.m. or so tomorrow morning. So those higher rain rates could cause some roadway flooding, particularly in Mendocino and Lake counties, increased debris of rock slides on roadways, all the typical concerns there, but any flooding that would occur would move out pretty quickly tomorrow.
Potential hazards from the storm include possible power outages, downed trees and tree damage, debris on roadways, and loose objects blown around. Be sure to secure any loose objects outdoors or on porches, and be careful driving on roadways during the storm. For up-to-date weather information, the website is weather.gov/EKA/. This is Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD News.
On November 8th, the Federal Drug Administration and Center for Disease Control and Prevention issued a recall after a multi-state outbreak of botulism was found to be connected to infants consuming ByHeart powdered infant formula. Humboldt County's Department of Health and Human Services confirmed that at least 4 cans of recalled ByHeart Whole Nutrition infant formula was sold at the Target in Eureka before the recall was issued. As of November 11th, ByHeart extended its recall to include all batches of its formula and stated that anyone with this formula should discontinue use immediately. DHHS sent an email with a statement about the issue. Quote, the cans were sold in early November prior to the recall for infant botulism on November 8th. No other stores in Humboldt County received shipments of the recalled lots. If you have used ByHeart formula purchased at Target this month, check the number and contact your medical office or public health at 707-268-2182 or the sheriff's office after hours at 707-445-7251 if your formula matches the lot numbers below. If your baby is showing any signs of illness, go to the closest emergency department, ED, and notify them that your baby received the recalled formula. Local EDs have been notified of the potential for cases. The following lots are being recalled. Lot 206-VA-BP-251261-P2, used by 01 December 2026, and Lot 206-VA-BP-251131-P2, used by 01 December 2026. The lot code and use-by date are located on the bottom of the infant formula can. End quote. According to the FDA website, ByHeart is being proactive to make sure all families are protected. Quote, the company is actively recalling all products from the market while the FDA's comprehensive investigation seeks to identify a root cause of the broader outbreak. Testing every batch of formula with an independent third-party laboratory, a process which has already begun. Providing FDA and the California Department of Public Health, CDPH, full access to our facilities and unopened cans to conduct testing without restriction. Sharing results from both regulatory and independent testing publicly as they become available. Unquote. For consumers that have bought this product, it is recommended to discontinue use immediately and throw away the product. Symptoms of infant botulism, according to DHHS, include, quote, constipation, poor feeding, loss of head control, and difficulty swallowing, which can progress to difficulty breathing and respiratory arrest. Symptoms of infant botulism, which is diagnosed clinically, can take as long as several weeks to develop following formula ingestion, end quote. For more information, visit FDA.gov. Yesterday was Veterans Day, marking the anniversary of November 11, 1918, armistice that ended World War I. The holiday began as Armistice Day, commemorating the end of the war at the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month. In 1954, it was renamed Veterans Day to honor all who have served in the U.S. wars. President Donald Trump marked the occasion with a speech at Arlington National Cemetery, but his comments didn't sit well with all who have served. Lauren Schmidt reports.
What began as the president's solemn tribute to veterans soon shifted towards remarks about the ongoing federal shutdown, and at times about honoring those who serve him.
I want to thank Secretary Doug Collins, who's outstanding, just done a fantastic job for the veterans. We have also Secretary of War. We like the sound of that better than the other. Secretary Pete Hegseth. Pete, thank you very much. Our great Attorney General, Pam Bondi. Pam. Secretary Doug Burgum. Doug, thank you.
Before the president laid a wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier at the Arlington National Cemetery, he made a surprise announcement, declaring that the holiday would be renamed.
That we are now going to be saying and calling Victory Day for World War I. Victory Day, you know, I was recently at an event and I saw France was celebrating Victory Day. But we didn't. And I saw France was celebrating another Victory Day for World War II. And other countries were celebrating. They were all celebrating. We're the one that won the wars. And I said, from now on, we're going to say Victory Day for World War I and World War II. And we could do for plenty of other wars, but we'll start with those two.
The announcement to change the name of Veterans Day to Victory Day was widely criticized as tone deaf. Among those speaking out is one of Northern California's oldest living veterans, a World War II staff sergeant with the 101st Airborne Division.
Do the best I can. I give them all I could.
That was George K. Mullins, a 100-year-old veteran.
Yeah. And I'm 2 years older than dirt.
The centenarian veteran was far from amused by the president's remarks. He says he sees alarming similarities between the regime he fought against in the 1940s and what he's witnessing today in America.
Oh my goodness. I think American people should get an education about voting for a dictator. I'm at war with dictators, I'll tell you. I don't believe in them. I put one down.
In 1944, George Mullins landed on Utah Beach and took part in key battles, including the liberation of Carrington, a place he still visits when he can. He fought in every campaign of the 327th Glider Infantry Regiment, earning a Purple Heart for wounds sustained in 1944. Mullins later served with the 101st Airborne Division during the Battle of the Bulge and continued into Germany, eventually crossing into Austria and reaching Hitler's Eagle Nest in Berchtesgaden. He says he fought in those battles to stand up against governments that threaten freedom, something he worries may be under attack in America.
Sure, Dad. There's not much difference. He reads them the books that Hitler put out, so he just thought he'd follow it. He's been that way all the way. He's got those Isaac people, that's the same as the Gestapo. There's no difference in them. They mistreat people, dragging them across the street with their hair. And I didn't go to war for that. I thought I was going to come home and it'd be more freedom. And freedom, hell, what would happen to the freedom to many thousands of people?
Particularly upsetting for the veteran, he says, are the actions of Immigration and Customs Enforcement against working people and families.
And the Constitution says, I believe, as far as I know, it says you're supposed to be tried in court before you get thrown in jail. Is that right? So it's not happened that way. It's been thousands of people drug out of here, real nice people trying to make a living for their families, all they're doing. So they split families up. They don't know who's half the kids are somewhere else. And it's not right. Now he's got him and his cronies. They're just like he is, and they're running the country. It's just way, exactly what Hitler did.
Sergeant Mullins is among fewer than half of 1% of the roughly 16.5 million Americans who served in World War II, still alive today. For Veterans Day, while he appreciates people honoring his service, he says what matters most is celebrating democracy by preserving it.
I don't give up just because something's not right out there. I didn't give up in the, over there, but sometimes I felt like I would be better off if I was a prisoner instead of those bullets and 88s, they call them. If you know what an 88 is, raining down on a day after day.
In closing, the World War II staff sergeant says the key to fighting fascism, then and now, begins with self-care.
Your health, if you don't have good health, you don't have it. You can't think straight. You can't work good. You can't do anything if you don't have good health.
You can learn more about George Mullins and his journey from war to peace in his 2023 memoir, Foxhole, a 263-page reflection of his life and service. For KPFA News, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
On November 7th, the Humboldt County Sheriff's deputy on patrol in Lolita made an arrest after contacting a vehicle partially obstructing a roadway and observing drug paraphernalia in plain view, Nat Cardos reports.
On November 7th, at approximately 10:22 p.m., a Humboldt County Sheriff's deputy on patrol in Lolita observed a vehicle partially obstructing a roadway in the area of Singley Hill Road. The vehicle was running and had occupants inside. Upon contact, the deputy observed drug paraphernalia in plain view in the vehicle. KMA News spoke to Aaron Inskip, public information officer for the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office, for more information on the incident.
So on November 7th, at approximately 10:22 p.m., a Humboldt County Sheriff's deputy on patrol in the area of Singley Hill Road in Lolita observed a vehicle parked partially obstructing the roadway. The vehicle's engine was running, and a male and female were observed inside. The deputy contacted the occupants and identified the vehicle's owner as 43-year-old Saeed Michael Owen of Miranda. During the contact, the deputy observed drug paraphernalia in plain view on the vehicle's front seat. A subsequent search of the vehicle revealed a sawed-off shotgun, bear spray, and approximately 11 grams of methamphetamine. And during this investigation, it was determined that Owen is a convicted felon. The female occupant was identified as 32-year-old Savannah Tori Iverson of Hoopaw. She was taken into custody on an outstanding warrant. Both Owen and Iverson were arrested and transported to the Humboldt County Correctional Facility. Owen was booked on the following charges: felon in possession of a firearm, possession of a short-barreled rifle, unlawful possession of tear gas, possession of a controlled substance while armed with a loaded weapon, possession of a controlled substance with two or more priors, possession of a controlled substance, and possession of drug paraphernalia. Iverson was booked on the outstanding warrant.
The Humboldt County Sheriff's Office encourages anyone with information about the case or related criminal activity to call the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office at 707-445-7251. This is Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD News.
In state news, California Head Start teachers speak out on shutdown, safety net cuts. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
Head Start teachers in California are speaking out about the chaos prompted not only by the government shutdown, but by cuts to safety net programs. The agreement to end the shutdown only funds the government through January 30th, so federally funded programs like Head Start face significant uncertainty going forward. Tammy Lewis is an early Head Start teacher in Gardena and a member of California Federation of Teachers, who says she works with low-income families every day.
SNAP and Medi-Cal have kept them from falling into poverty. The Head Start program had allowed them to go to work and not have to worry about that coming out of their paycheck.
The Republican funding bill signed last July cut billions from Medi-Cal and the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, known as CalFresh, in the Golden State. And it allowed subsidies for health plans through Covered California to expire at the end of the year. Covered California, in a statement, said it expects costs to almost double for millions of families. Nationally, more than 20 million people rely on subsidies to afford health plans sold on the Affordable Care Act exchanges. While Head Start in Gardena is funded through next June, other Head Start programs, including three in California, had to close during this past shutdown. Lewis says she's weathered other shutdowns in her 15 years at Head Start, but this one has been the worst.
It's scary because you don't know where your future lies. This is what I've basically been doing all of my life. So it's kind of scary because I don't know what I will be doing next if Head Start was the end.
As of 2022, more than 260,000 people worked for Head Start nationwide. California receives more than $850 million a year in federal funding for the program. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, AI stocks lose $1.1 trillion as concerns of AI bubble and ripple effects grow, KPFA's Arjun Das reports.
AI stocks have faltered in recent weeks. Investors Business Daily reports that the 70 U.S.-listed stocks in the Global X Artificial Intelligence and Technology ETF have shed $1.1 trillion in value since October 29th. This lackluster stock performance comes against a larger backdrop of fears over the existence of an AI bubble. Meta, Alphabet, Microsoft, and Amazon alone are expected to spend a combined $350 billion on AI-related capital expenditure this year. Some investors and economists are now raising the alarm bell. Ryan Cummings, chief of staff at the Stanford Institute for Economic Policy Research, spoke with us about the current state of the AI bubble.
We have valuations in the tech sector in particular that are very high. So, for example, if you look at the S&P 500 technology sector, the price-to-earnings ratio, which is essentially a measure of how much future profits are being valued over current ones, that ratio is higher than it's been since the dot-com bubble.
He spoke about the balance between the promise of AI technology and the practical reality of investment in the industry today.
I think you can hold two thoughts in your head at the same time, which is one, that AI is going to be a revolutionary technology that will generate a lot of profits, but also two, we're in a bubble because the amount of profits that are kind of being anticipated, like I said in the beginning, are just kind of way outstretching what actually might occur.
An AI bubble and its corresponding pop could have a ripple effect felt throughout the broader economy.
Economists refer to something as a wealth effect, meaning if you have your money in the stock market, the more stock prices appreciate, you don't have to save as much as your current income to justify your consumption, right? So you can consume more now without eating away at your savings later because the market's going up. Kind of right now, the wealth effect is driving about $100 billion in extra consumption that we think is being generated just from AI stocks alone. And on the flip side of that, if we do see the bubble pop and we see consumption decrease, then we can expect that wealth effect again to bite in the other direction.
The Bay Area in particular could feel significant impacts from the AI bubble due to the concentration of technology companies.
You know, we have a lot of engineers here that are getting paid a lot of money, and those are high-income consumers. So they're supporting restaurants around San Francisco. They're going out and they're buying new cars. They're getting upgrades to their homes. We're going to see those consumption effects more concentrated than a lot of other parts of the country.
He also said he sees similarities and differences between the AI bubble and the 2008 financial crisis.
I think no matter what, if the AI bubble does pop, meaning a large correction in stock prices, that's going to be felt broadly throughout the economy. Now, there's two components there, which I think is very different than the financial crisis. One, in 2008, in the financial crisis, that was really jarring because the unemployment rate got above 10%. The unemployment rate would have to effectively 2.5x. I think if the AI bubble pops, it won't be that bad. And then the question is, how long will the recession last? Again, in 2008, that was so detrimental to the U.S. economy because it froze credit. People realizing, oh, okay, AI is profitable, but not as profitable as we thought it might be. I don't see that freezing global credit the same way that happened in 2008, which took a decade to recover from. If there is a bubble and it does indeed pop, I don't think it will be as severe as 2008.
You can read more about Ryan's take on the AI bubble in his New York Times article from October 14th, titled, Warning, Our Stock Market is Looking Like a Bubble. For KPFA News, I'm Arjun Das.
In National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Current rules defining how the Colorado River is to be shared by 40 million residents in the West will soon expire. The seven basin states had until Tuesday to negotiate those new guidelines. As KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports, no deal was struck.
States still cannot come to terms, leaving tribes lost in the shuffle. Daniel Cordalis is Navajo and runs the Native American Rights Fund's Tribal Water Institute. He believes the Bureau of Reclamation's deadline is arbitrary.
If it means anything, maybe the federal government's going to step in and start throwing some weight around.
When no reclamation nominee has been tapped to replace Trump's old pick, Ted Cook. Beyond the bickering upper and lower basin states, there's 30 federally recognized tribes stuck in the middle of a decades-old debate on how best to divvy the water while keeping the ever-dwindling river flowing.
They have to try to come up with ideas that are doable and that will benefit the entire system, not just tribes. And I hope that none of that is compromised by this deadline coming and going.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
Alaska Federation of Natives President Ben Mallah and about 100 other tribal leaders were in Washington, D.C. last week and had a brief visit with Vice President J.D. Vance on Friday. Mallah said it was a good step forward to be invited and is looking forward to more engagement next year. Vance gave a brief presentation on the potential for economic development in Indian country, including manufacturing. Principal Chief of the Cherokee Nation, Chuck Hoskin Jr., said it was good to hear the vice president focus on things that could be done in Indian country. Months before a storm devastated parts of western Alaska, a federal agency canceled a grant that would have helped protect one of the communities from flooding. Ayolna Niden with the Alaska Desk has more on what that money could have done for the village of Kipnuk and what lies ahead for the community.
Raina Paul is the environmental director for the village of Kipnuk. Her house was one of many that was swept upriver during the historic storm last month.
We were so not ready. We were so not prepared.
Paul says the community now needs time to heal and rebuild. The remnants of Typhoon Halon devastated about a dozen villages. Months before the storm, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency canceled a $20 million grant that would have helped Kipnuk protect infrastructure from flooding. Paul says Kipnuk has been losing more than 10 feet of riverbank each year.
We're facing erosion. The sea level is rising. The permafrost is melting.
Paul spent months applying for funding through the EPA's Community Change Grants Program. But the Trump administration terminated the program in May in a broader effort to roll back environmental justice funding. The decision is at the heart of the lawsuit that Kipnuk signed on to. In August, the court denied a motion to block the program's termination. The plaintiffs appealed that decision. Cheryl Musgrove is with the Alaska Institute for Justice.
This was a chance for the federal government to finally show that they cared and that they were willing to invest in this small community in remote Alaska.
EPA Press Secretary Bridget Hirsch said that the funding would not have prevented destruction in the community. Hirsch said that, quote, while partisans on the left would apparently prefer to have seen those precious tax dollars washed away, EPA now has the resources available to ensure the money is spent appropriately and wisely, end quote. Musgrove says the first year of the grant was meant for planning, and the construction would have not begun by the time of the storm. She says that the first phase would have also included hazardous waste removal.
Now that's in the river in the Bering Sea.
Musgrove says she hopes that the devastation of the storm highlights the needs of the villages like Kipnuk and helps them mobilize resources for finding long-term solutions. In Anchorage, I am Alona Niden.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network. That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Annette Cardos, Lauren Schmidt, Suzanne Potter, Archin Das, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online. You can find us on kmud.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have any questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Gabriel Zucker.